We always appreciate when the chancellor of the campus of the University of Missouri here in Columbia joins us, and that's Brady Deaton, and he's in the studio with us, and it's good to see you. How are you?
David, great. Good to see you again.
How's your summer going?
It's one of the most intense, busy summers of history, let me say.
You know what? I would have thought last summer would have been, but you're saying that this one, I mean, because last summer was when everything was starting to percolate.
Right.
I mean, at this point time, you were still part of the
Big 12. Throes of the Big 12 and the SEC transition.
So
that's right.
Yeah. This is as intense as that.
This is very intense, the summer. And just yesterday on campus, we had a major energy summit. The governor was there, and we're looking at, with Ameren and Westinghouse, you know, the small modular reactors that we have scientists who've done a great deal of work in that area. So it was an exciting day, really, for us, even yesterday.
Why you bring that up? I want to ask you a question about that. The presiding commissioner of Boone County was in this in the building last week, and he was talking about that. And he said he felt like that's a huge deal because Central Missouri, in his opinion, could become one of the worldwide leaders in these smaller nuclear power plants that might come from here. How do you evaluate what this is?
Absolutely. We have that potential because of many years of good, solid research here at the university as part of it, and having Ameren and Westinghouse as major power providers. We have a coalition right now with the support of the governor. It's important. So we have a major bid in, Ameren and Westinghouse does, to the Department of Energy to undertake research. I believe it's 50-50 matching, but we're talking about $400 and some million. And it could make Central Missouri the production and distribution point for the world, really, on these particular types of reactors. And it's proven technology.
And that would be a boon for the university because it would recognize the research that has been done and will continue to be done here?
Exactly. There's a great deal of research yet to be done, as well as education and training. And the research on safety issues, on particular components of the modular improvements in efficiency that can be gained. So a great deal of pretty fundamental research, as well as it would continue to draw on a lot of the basic research here at the university in physics and nuclear science.
When might there be word on those grants? And how would you, I guess this is a two-part question. First of all, Presiding Commissioner Atwell, he said that this could be, he said, I'm not talking millions and not talking billions. He said, this could reach $1 trillion in the long term. I'm not talking about tomorrow or the next 5 years, but long term it could.
Right. In the long term, most optimistic, so to speak, it could totally transform much of the economy of Missouri, it seems to me. In a very significant way, be a very significant addition, I should say, to job creation and a whole industrial structure, new manufacturing base here that's quite different.
So what time, when would this start to pick up some momentum where it would start to make a difference?
We expect to hear something about the grant during the next month is our expectation. By sometime in August, I believe there was the expectation.
If that's a 50-50 grant, where's the 50 that we're responsible for in this state going to come from?
Ameren and Westinghouse.
They would do that, and then the U.S. government would be the other 50, so
yes,
that would be good.
Right.
We could be the beneficiaries of that here.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Chancellor Brady Deaton is our guest, and I knew that was something yesterday, and I wondered how to interpret that at the proper interpretation, but that'll be exciting news to know if within the next month something like that is happening. The last couple of months, another thing that has made this summer rather intense for you, the University of Missouri Press. I think it's interesting because I was actually in a group on Sunday where a question was raised to a person who is responsible for the production of the Columbia Missourian about whether the University of Missouri Press in any way impacted the Missourian. Well, it does not. Those are different things. But
that's right.
The University of Missouri Press, its future now seems to me to be in the hands of your campus.
That's correct. And the press, of course, has been closed. The University of Missouri Press that publishes books was under the University of Missouri system, and the decision was made in consultation, certainly, with the leadership of the entire university system, including chancellors of each of the four campuses. The decision was made to shut the press down. We had had a group under the Mizzou Advantage looking at media of the future that it would include the Columbia Missourian and the Missouri Review and the RJI, Reynolds Journalism Institute, looking at the future of media. The University of Missouri, Columbia, is a world center for looking at the future of media. So out of that initiative grew a group that had been looking at the University of Missouri Press and future scholarly publishing. The press is a book production of a very complex system of scholarly publishing that includes all the journal articles that I've written in my career, let's say over 100 academic journal articles, all published in various formats, including a couple of books. But we publish all kinds of things, and the university is engaged in that. And we subsidize that. So there's nothing necessarily negative about subsidizing. It's part of the job of the university to ensure that scholars get their work out there and that it gets stored or archived so that future scholars, I read material every time I do research. I go back probably 100 years oftentimes and I read the classics, whether it's Marx or Keynes or John Stuart Mill or whatever. Those are very fundamental thoughts. Same is true in all fields of the academic world. And so scholarly publishing is a big item that goes way beyond books. So that group had been meeting for about a year, actually, prior to the decision that was made to shut down the University of Missouri Press. And we were not ready, however, to go forward with an alternative. But when the press closed, we intensified the efforts of that group to come forward with a reasonable kind of business plan that gave us a basis for going forward.
And so they responded.
We have that. They responded, and we feel very good about it, that we were able to embrace components of the press, so to speak, and book publishing will now become part of the overall scholarly mission we have. We will do it using the most innovative ways possible, developed by the Reynolds Journalism Institute, by our creative writing program, our library science program. And yes, we don't fully know all the dimensions of it yet, but we're willing to engage in the continued support of that endeavor. That includes scholarly publishing in journals, in proceedings, and in digital form, in electronic form, and be very innovative about the way in which we draw up contracts with future authors to publish some in hard print books, but some may be published in a variety of other formats as well.
Was there a thought a year ago when the group was meeting about how to integrate together the Reynolds Journalism Institute, Mizzou Review, and all these other things? Was there a thought then it would be nice to include University of Missouri Press at that time, or was that something that was not on the table?
No, there was discussion of that potential. At that time, of course, the press was moving along, and I'm not sure when the first thought was given to, gee, we just can't continue to publish this. To continue the operation because of the amount of cost. As you know, at that time, we were facing enormous cuts in state budget. And all of us were bringing to the table, and by all of us, I mean each of the chancellors was bringing our list of things we had to cut, that we had to reduce costs, including then the system was bringing forward the University of Missouri Press. So it was one of many things we were having to deal with and reduce, and in some case eliminate. And so there was, at that point, it was sort of like, we're only faced with so many options here, and we've got to do the best thing to keep the university moving strongly. As it turned out, of course, we did not have as severe a cuts as we had anticipated, thanks to the state legislature. So here we are now dealing with it, and there's clearly changes needed in publishing generally, nationally. We're facing this, and we know that it's a very different environment for book publishing today than it was a decade ago.
Change is tough, and those who have been loyal to University of Missouri Press in its past manifestation, they're having difficulty saying that this is going to be the same. Some are saying, look, it's not a big change because we were already, as one of the selling points of this reimagined University of Missouri Press was online publications and all of this. And some who were with the University of Missouri Press for a while are saying, oh, that's not new. We've been working on that. So that change is coming along. It had not been campus specific as the University of Missouri Press.
Right.
Now it will be connected with the University of Missouri Columbia campus. Is that standard for, I know that Truman State has a press, Princeton, Harvard, Yale, almost all these schools that have their presses, are they campus specific and can that carry as much weight as it did in its past? Level of respect and the level of importance that it has.
Well, it will. In fact, most of the presses are campus specific, and many of those are also reducing the amount of subsidy, quote unquote, to use that term, that they can provide because of budgets, particularly the public universities. So the University of Missouri Columbia is engaged in moving forward in the most aggressive way possible to do the most appropriate thing it can to support our faculty scholars and then publishing. Presses have been a commitment made by universities across this country to ensure a book outlet as well as journal outlets and other kinds of many other kinds of publication outlets, monographs of various sorts, workbooks of various sorts. They're all worthwhile scholarly ventures. I honor books, as we all do, I think, in the scholarly world. We want those. The costs of producing them when you have very limited markets is a real challenge. And so a forward-looking press will embrace the very latest thinking. That's why we need faculty and graduate students and innovative entrepreneurs, such as we have at the Reynolds Journalism Institute, to take a look at various ways in which we can bring all this together and come out with new products. That includes books. Some books may be a combination of, they'll be digital, they'll be in print. And yes, some of this, I understand, was being done by the current University of Missouri Press. And as we get more familiar with the potential there, it may take a shape that none of us envision at this point, which I think will be the case.
I've interviewed several authors who have had their books published by University of Missouri Press, and I've seen the catalogs regularly. They come out two or three times a year. What people may not understand is the authors, when hearing the conversation about the University of Missouri Press, that does not mean that the researchers and the professors at the campus of the University of Missouri or any of the campuses get their books published by University of Missouri Press. These are writers who come from all over
That's
the country.
Right.
And oftentimes
right.
you will not see a University of Missouri connected author in the book catalog.
Absolutely. And that does confuse a lot of people. Uh-huh. The University of Missouri Press wasn't here just to serve at all the faculty here at the University of Missouri. I looked at 16, 19 books on display at our library a month ago. There wasn't a single one of these. Are all campus authors. None of them were published by the University of Missouri Press. And that's not at all a negative comment about the University of Missouri Press. If you look at their books, in fact, the president of Harvard, Heather Faust, I sit close to her at AAU meetings. She always is excited to talk about her book. That is, her most recent book was published by the University of Missouri Press. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. You know, we celebrate that, and I'm excited to have people like that, very distinguished scholars that are published here. We want that to continue. We want to do it in a way that's drawing on the absolute latest thinking in scholarly publications. And we will publish through the University of Missouri now, we will publish a range of materials that we probably were not publishing before. It won't be just books. It'll be a variety of forms of scholarly communications.
Let me ask you one final question about this. Those who are bothered by the ending of the old University of Missouri Press and have some questions and criticisms of what they see as coming as the new, what do you think is most legitimate about their complaints, if anything, and do you think that their reaction more is just because, look, this is taking away something that we thought was doing a great job the way it used to be?
Well, I fully understand the issues here, because people are hurt when something they thought they were doing, and I have no doubt that the current employees at the press were doing the absolute best job they thought possible, and a change has occurred. And I'm in no way indicting what they were doing. They were in an environment. They weren't on the campus. They weren't, in a sense, part of the campus fabric in a way that I think a press needs to be. And that's an important difference. And I think that's been recognized by everyone as we talked with the system administration. They recognize that running a press outside the domain of a set of scholarly endeavors on campus is working, in a sense, at a bit of a disadvantage. You got to integrate them as much as possible. You still then have to do things. We run a TV station and radio stations, and newspapers, but we have students working in all those, and we have faculty involved in the editorial positions. Well, we had faculty editors with the press. But the production system, the day-to-day work, will be much more integrated. It'll be on campus in McReynolds Hall initially, and it will be integrated with what we're doing. And therefore, it offers potential of capturing new ideas and moving on them quickly and not wedded to an old form. For the people involved, I'm very understanding of how if you're doing a good job, you don't want someone to tell you that you've not been doing a good job. So I'm hoping that a transition can be made that helps us understand better the dimensions and where contributions can be made by those professional skills that people have at the press.
Brady Deaton is with us. We're going to take a break for a couple of announcements. We'll come back and change subjects. That's next on News Talk 1400 KFRU. News Talk 1400 KFRU. Our guest is the Chancellor of the campus of the University of Missouri here in Columbia, Brady Deaton, and he takes time to join us as often as we can. We try to do this each month, and sometimes schedules prevent that, but we're glad to be able to talk to him today. Today is the day after the NCAA made its announcement about punishment for Penn State. I don't care to rehash what happened at Penn State specifically, but I thought that Mark Emmert, who is the president of the NCAA, he is a staff member hired, and then Edward Ray, the president of Oregon State, they were a part of the announcement yesterday. I thought their announcement was a larger message to universities and colleges across the country about the culture where football seems to rule and dominate. Who can't remember the Ohio State comment by the president, his last name is Gee, when Jim Tressel was going through some of the problems there, and he made some sort of comment about he's fearful that Jim Tressel might fire him or something. I mean, that was said, I think, in jest, but it's been used as an example of the power of football. How did you respond to what happened yesterday?
Well, I responded with sadness, let me say, because this has been a tragic affair and probably the most disgusting affair that we've seen in intercollegiate athletics in history. To see top administration of a university covering up wrongdoing that was so harmful to families and to young people is absolutely disgusting. So you've got to start there. The NCAA did exactly, I would say exactly, they did the right thing. And Mark Emmert's a true university citizen and administrator, and Ed Ray both. I've worked with them for many, many years, and they very thoughtfully with their colleagues put together a plan here that demonstrated, hopefully, to all of higher education that that academics and the academic purpose of a university is where we should be placing our emphasis. Athletic programs are part of what we do to engage alumni and to allow student-athletes to achieve their goals. But that's part of a university system, and the university has to have institutional control over that matter. Athletics is not the most important thing at all that we do at a university, and I'm just quoting Mike Alden on that. He's quite happy to say that. And that's nothing demeaning about that. It's just that it's a subpart of a big, complex enterprise that we're involved in. And I think Mark Emmert said it right. No one should ever think that football or any athletic program is a dominant part of the university. The universities have to have control of these, and we have to have people in positions who are willing to make the decisions to ensure credibility, integrity, and ethical procedures in every aspect of our athletic programs.
Pete Thamel is a reporter, and he comments on sports for the New York Times, and he wrote in his column today, he said that the language that the NCAA bosses who handed down the sanctions yesterday was unrelievably grim. He said the comments involving too big to fail and a grave danger to the values and integrity of their institutions. He quotes Edward Ray as saying, "We've had enough. This has to stop." Says there's a culture of football reverence and a fear of bad publicity. You know, I think that I personally think this is a ongoing, continuing danger in so many settings. I mean, we've seen it at Ohio State, at Miami, at UConn for basketball. I mean, these pressures and. Yeah. And as Pete Thamel writes, the money involved in big-time college sports is staggering. And it is.
It is. And that's a very difficult issue to manage by administrators of universities, because there is significant appetite in the American public for college athletic competition. That's real. But we have to manage it with utmost integrity and act like the CEOs that we're here to be. And you can't give an inch on that. And, you know, Mike Slive said it well at the SEC Newsday when he said, no one program, no one person, no matter how popular, no matter how successful, can be allowed to derail the soul of an institution. I'm really pleased that David Matter quoted that in the Sunday Tribune, because when I saw that quote, I sent a text to Mike Slive and I said, Mike, thank God, you know, you stepped forward, because we all have stepped forward on this issue. It's too important. Athletics is a wonderful, exciting, vibrant part of higher education today, but it is just that. It's a part, it's a fun thing we do. It's a way we gather people together. But the universities cannot allow the athletic programs to dominate. And when you get as much money involved as many of them have, there's a tendency for people to think that they have power beyond where they can be allowed to have power.
The thing about it is, in politics, in religion, churches, in media, and performing, you can put people at such a pedestal as the what Mike Slive said about the one person giving that much control. Right. I mean, he was referring in a non-direct way to Joe Paterno, who was revered. I don't think people here, I mean, I know people who spoke so highly of Joe Paterno. I mean, it was like he was deity.
Exactly.
And I'm not exaggerating much in some ways. So it's a warning about that in any areas of our life.
Absolutely. And, and David, I appreciate you emphasizing that in any aspect of life. We have to honor the very fundamentals of our society and our principles. And no one person is that important. And believe me, there are people throughout our country, including Missouri, who believe that some of these people, coaches, should be put on a pedestal and treated differently. And we have to insist that that's not the case. They're our employees. They live by the rules of the university. They're expected as role models, in fact, to live to a higher ethical standard. And when they don't do that, you've got to make changes.
You know, it's interesting because you referred to a Tribune reporter. One of the Tribune reporters was writing about Saban, the coach of Alabama, and how people just grab a hold. And, you know, there's a statue for him. Right. He won a national championship. I understand if that is your precedent to say if you win a national championship, you're going to get a statue outside of the stadium, then you follow that. And I guess it was Dave Matter's column. I mean, it's the same one. I remember reading that on Sunday, and that was interesting. I guess final thought then from you. We're coming the week after. I mean, so much is made of our entry into the SEC. I find this to be interesting timing for you to try to set some perspective here.
Right.
Last week, Missouri participated in its first SEC football media days, where it has been well documented by all that went down there and many reporters from here, TV, and newspaper reporters went down there, 750 credentialed. Wild scene, making so much out of football in the SEC, the epitome, the goal of all collegiate teams to get into the SEC, which is the best football. If I'm just a listener and not a sports fan, I'm thinking, folks, it's already happened. It's already happened at MU, exactly what the worry is on the NCAA level. How do you say, no, it hasn't?
No, it hasn't happened because we have it in perspective. We have athletics in a proper perspective here at the University of Missouri. Yes, it's big, but the public at large, treat football and other athletics much like we do rock stars, much like we do some movie stars. And that's the public that's doing this, and they're providing the support that enables it to be big. It can be big and still be ethical and can still be helping feed the university. Athletics as a whole is by far not the largest part of the budget of the university. I mean, at below $60 million right now, our research program is hundreds of millions of dollars beyond that, as our medical school and hospital is way beyond that. So money-wise, there's large money everywhere, but it's spread in different ways. And athletics is a part of the university, and it's an exciting and fun part of the university, but it is just that. Mm. And it can be very important in helping drive our academic mission also, and we've worked very hard here to do that. And I was happy to see the commissioner of the SEC make this comment, because that's the conference we are going into now. But Missouri will do it with its head held high, bringing the values of this university, respect, responsibility, discovery, and excellence, into the Southeastern Conference with our athletic program. It's a two-way communication process. I'm sure they will be enriched just as we will be enriched in that process.
I think the intensity and the challenge for you will continue, won't it?
It will.
Chancellor Deaton, it's always good to talk to you. I look forward to our next visit. Thank you very much, David. That's Chancellor Brady Deaton, our guest. He's the chancellor of the campus of the University of Missouri here in Columbia, and we appreciate his time on News Talk 1400 KFRU Columbia. We come up on 9 o'clock in news.